gets into the mouths of horses to make them obey us, we can turn the whole animal. Or take ships as an example. Although they are so large and are driven by strong winds, they are steered by a very small rudder wherever the pilot wants to go. Likewise, the tongue is a small part of the body, but it makes great boasts. Consider what a great forest is set on fire by a small spark. The tongue is also a fire, a world of evil among the parts of the body. It corrupts the whole person, sets the whole course of his life on fire, and is itself set on fire by hell. All kinds of animals, birds, reptiles, and creatures of the sea are being tamed and have been tamed by man, but no man can tame the tongue. It is a restless evil full of deadly poison. With the tongue we praise our Lord and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in God's likeness. Out of the same mouth come praise and cursing. My brothers, this should not be. Can both fresh water and salt water flow from the same spring? My brothers, can a fig tree bear olives or a grapevine bear figs? Neither can a salt spring produce fresh water.
Let's stop right there. Thank you, Mike. Now, Jesus is saying, guard your tongue. Don't promise something unless you can. You don't have to take an oath. Now, as you know, there are people in our day, back in his day, there were certain Jewish leaders who would never take an oath on anything, and there are people in our day, I remember in the 7th and 8th grade when we would stand to pledge our allegiance to the flag, there were two students who walked out in the hallway. They were from a different Christian religion, and they didn't believe in pledging allegiance or taking an oath about anything. That was what their family taught them. So they were allowed to go out in the hallway while we pledged allegiance to the flag. And Jesus wasn't really talking about that. If you really want to check on what Jesus was saying, let's look over and see how it affected the Apostle Paul. Look at Galatians chapter 1, verse 20. Chapter 1, verse 20, the book of Galatians. Margaret, do you have that? Will you read it out loud?
I declare before God that I am writing to you. What I am writing to you is not a lie.
That's the Apostle Paul, the great Christian leader. I declare before God. Now, he's not saying in the name of God, but he's saying, God's hearing me. I want you to know that. I'm telling you the truth. Or let's go back to, 2 Corinthians chapter 1. Verse 23, this is the Apostle Paul.
I call God as my witness that it was in order to spare you that I did not return to harm.
God as my witness. So you see, what Jesus was saying was not that you couldn't say, I really mean this. But you don't need to take an oath in the name of someone to just say the truth. But the Apostle Paul, twice in his letters, says in the presence of God, or God is my witness, this is the way it is. Now, if you're asked to go before the court, I have twice in my life had to give a testimony about something. Either related to somebody else, or one time it was related to me because I was being sued and I won the case, but that's not important. It really wasn't a bad thing. But anyway, I didn't do what they said I did. But anyway, it doesn't matter. But I had put my hand on a Bible. And in one case, they came out and he said, you raise your hand. He didn't put a Bible, they just raise your hand. Do you promise to tell the truth? And I said, yes. And then he said, you are a Baptist minister. I want the court to know that. We can assume you'll tell the truth. And that was an interesting thing. I don't know why the judge did that. The other case, I'd put my hand on a Bible and say, I promise to tell the truth. Jesus wasn't saying you can't obey Caesar, who asked you to put your hand on a Bible or something. What he's saying is that your heart, and your heart can be in a mess if you don't learn to control your tongue. And I don't know how to tell you how painful it is for me to stand before you and admit that's the hardest thing for me to do. It's harder to control my tongue than it is not to look at a pretty woman and stare. I mean, I can turn away and look at my wife or somebody else. But
oh, you're in trouble now.
What?
I think you're in trouble. You better stop while you're...
Yeah, but it's hard to control my tongue. I speak before I think. And, you know, you say something and then you realize you shouldn't have said it. Or you didn't mean it the way it came out. And Jesus is saying, don't go around saying in the name of God such and such and such. And I'm, by surely and such and such. And just tell the truth. Then he goes on to say, let your yes be yes and your no, no. Anything more is the devil's work. I don't know how to say it. It just is. Then he goes and says, you've heard it say an eye for an eye and a tooth for tooth. Now you all know that is called the lex talionis. You all remember that's a Latin word, don't you?
No.
Huh?
Never heard it.
Oh, come on. Lex talionis. Lex talionis in Latin. And it means the law of retaliation. That's what it means. Who was it first proposed that law of retaliation? Eye for an eye and tooth for a tooth.
Cain.
Hmm?
Cain and Abel. Cain did.
Cain and Abel?
He was jealous and mad at Abel.
Well, he was, but the first one to write it as a law, who was it? To write it as a law in history. Hammurabi. 2200 something B.C. They found it in the writings on tablets. In other words, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, an ear for an ear. And the Jewish people practiced that. Now, what they didn't literally take an eye for an eye. All right, you're aware of that, aren't you? Because you might have lost a bad eye, but I'm losing a good eye, and the two aren't equal. Or you might have lost your arm, but you don't ever use it. Didn't need it anyway. But I have to have both my arms to earn a living. So what would happen is I'd have to pay a fine. And those laws are all in the Old Testament, if you want to go back and read them. I'll be glad to tell you where they are, but you could look in the book of Deuteronomy, you'll find them, or the book of Leviticus, you'll find them. And so when they did eye for eye and tooth for tooth, they might have taken a tooth for a tooth, but it's possible that they did mostly what we do today, fine you, or take away some of your freedom where you have to go to prison. And Jesus is saying, I tell you, don't resist an evildoer. And somebody says, well, that's crazy. What if somebody comes in, they're going to kill my family? You mean self-defense is not important? Is Jesus really living in the real world when he comes to us with this from God and says, don't resist an evildoer? That is an interesting thing, because he says if somebody slaps you on the right cheek, if I want to slap one of you on the right cheek from here facing you, how would I do that? I would use my hand, my right hand, and I'd do it with the back of my hand. In other words, if somebody is really degrading you, to slap someone with the back of your hand is to say, you're worthless. Get out of my way. Bam! Then he says, you turn your other cheek. And what is he saying? If they're going to slap you again, they've got to realize you are a worthwhile human being, because anybody who slaps somebody that way would have to do it with the open part of their hand and say, you're worthwhile, you're not worthless. And you would be sending a message to them. Now, what he's talking about here is having an appreciation of the fact that all of us are human beings, and you may not understand what's going on. So if you are going to treat someone the wrong way, be prepared for them to demand your respect. But when he says, do not resist an evildoer, what he is saying is, do not assume that person does not have a right to do what you think is evil. For instance, let's just put it this way. There was a time in my life when my wife said, Ted, somebody's come into the house. I said, no, there's nobody here. You know, I'm sleeping. I don't hear anything while I'm sleeping. She said, yeah, there is. I heard him come in. So I got up, and I, with great bravado, I loaded my lever action Marlin 30-30 deer gun and spoke out loud to Margaret, get near the phone, ready to call 911, honey. Of course, my daughters were asleep in the other room. And then I started out of the bedroom and down the stairs. I was going to protect my girls and my wife. And I go down through the house. If you're in this house and you don't belong here, you better move, because I will shoot to defend myself. I'd rather not. When I started talking like that, I don't know why you're here, but if we can help you, I'll be glad to help you, but I don't want to mislead you. I will shoot if you don't leave. I will defend myself. If you've got a gun, you be better ready to use it. And I started talking, you know, how did he just, oh, you know, well, turns out there was nobody in the house. Now, there was the back door. It was a sliding glass door. It was open about that much. And she said she had heard it, and I don't doubt she did. So if somebody came in that door, they didn't stay very long, and I didn't see them, because then, like a dummy, I went down to the basement to see if they were there. And if they had been, Lord knows what I've done. There was no way out of that basement except back up the stairs. Well, there was a window. If you could have opened the window and climbed into a window well, how dumb was I, you know? But you see the point? The point is, Jesus is saying, don't resist an evildoer, meaning be careful before you jump to conclusions. And be ready to turn the other cheek, to turn it around and demand their respect. Someone wants to take advantage of you, wants to call you not worthy of where you are or who you are or what you're doing or holding the job you have. Treat them with respect whether they deserve it or not, because you have to demand respect for yourself if you ever want it. And the way you demand it is you give it. But I don't think Jesus meant you cannot. In fact, there's no evidence in any of the commentaries that I've read. No evidence he meant that they come in and want to kill you and your wife. You're just supposed to say, okay, go ahead. Now, some of you will disagree with that, because in your own mind and heart, you just can't get around what Jesus is saying, and from your point of view, how can you be defending yourself if you really mean you can't expect them to respect you and you really ought to just kill them? You're saying, I just can't get this. What I want you to know is Jesus didn't expect you to get it. He meant the greatest power on earth is love, not hate. It's life, not murder. And so the early Christians submitted themselves to the authorities when they were arrested. They were accused uncaring, untruthfully. They often went to the death by the hands of the Romans willingly. You can read stories of the martyrs of the Christian faith all the way up to today in various parts of the world. Someone in here, I believe it was Ken, it might not have been Ken, somebody gave me a book about modern missionaries in the last 50 years. Southern Baptist missionaries who have willingly stood for what they believe and have either lost their life or have lost everything because they took Jesus seriously. You see, there is a place for self-defense, and there is a place for a witness for what you believe. And you've got to know which is which. A man coming into my house to kill me for what I can tell is no reason. I want to be careful about shooting him. I want to be careful enough to get not my 30-30, but my shotgun and just shoot him in the legs and find out what's going on with this man. And Jesus is speaking clearly to you and me about our culture. We do not win the Christian battle by just electing people like us, hoping they'll do what we want them to do in Congress. I'm going to get really political, folks, so if it's uncomfortable, just hear me out. My heart breaks because godly Christian men and women in Congress, both the House of Representatives and the Senators, people we know we'd be glad to have them in this class, people who believe what we believe on both sides of the aisle, will not act like Christians and say, let's fix our health care problems. Let's fix it. We're Christians. We know how to agree with each other. We know how to disagree without being disagreeable. We can solve this. It's not about the Republicans and the Democrats winning. We're Christians. We'll give up something. We'll give in to that person who says, I'm going to take away your power as a Democrat or as a Republican. So what? I'm going to do what's right. You may not ever get reelected. So what? I'm a Christian. I will do what's right. It breaks my heart to say that men and women that you and I respect as Christians in politics don't put their Lord first. Now, if you're uncomfortable with that, I understand there are all kinds of human reasons why they don't. But Jesus, in the Sermon on the Mount, says, I don't care about your human reasons. This is right. This is wrong. Now, that's my application today. That's my sincere application about ourselves, because there are more than one way for someone to take from you what you don't want them to take. Let's move a little further in this little lesson. He says, if someone wants your shirt, let him have your cloak or your coat as well. Now, all of you have heard this lesson, I know you have, umpteen times, have you not? This was a common experience in Jesus' day where someone who needed a cloak, an outer coat, didn't have one. Most people would only have one outer coat, but they'd have more than one inner coat. And he didn't mean, if they asked for my outer coat, then you just take off your inner coat too and you're standing there buck naked. That's not what he meant. That's not what he meant. What he said, what he's saying is, if they need your outer coat, you've only got one of them. And they don't have one, but you know good and well that they need it. If you think they need your inner coat too, see to it that you give them one of yours. You might not have to take off the one you had. You might go and get one that you had, because most people had more than one inner coat. How many of you have more than one? Men, how many of you have more than one suit at home? Yeah, me too. Yeah. How many of you have more than one sport coat? Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too. How many of you can remember when you had one pair of shoes, men? And everything I wore had to be the color of those shoes, black. I didn't wear anything without fit black shoes. Ladies, how many of you can remember you had one Sunday dress, you call it? One. Mm-hmm. Not many of you. Now, here's what Jesus is saying. If somebody needs what you have, they really need your outer coat, and that means you won't have one, because most people only have one outer coat. Give it to them if they really need it, and make sure they got an inner coat too. Be generous. As we have all heard it said, generosity always comes back. Maybe not in stuff, but in love and respect. And what really matters most to you is not the stuff you have, it's that people think you are worthy of their love. You see what Jesus is saying? Let's go a little further. He says, if somebody forces you to go 1 mile, go with him too. Now, you all have heard this. I know every one of you have. But I'll just remind you, in those days, this was a law which came from the Persians. Who are the Persians today? Anybody know? Iranians, that's right. Iranians. The Persians had a law that if you needed help to take something from here to there, you could tap somebody on the shoulder and they would do it. There's a word in the English, in the ancient Hebrew and the Greek languages and the ancient Persian languages that describes that. The word's not important because it's somebody said, do this. I expect you to do this. But in that Persian law, it had to do with carrying mail or something important from one place to another. And it was their system of communication. It was a very unique cooperative system of communicating in the Persian Empire. They had wonderful roads. They beat the Romans about that. And they would pass on mail one person to another, and if I came to you and tapped you on the shoulder, take this down there, you'd take it down there, and the next person would take it to the next place. Go a mile, or however far they ask you. But now it had become something the Romans did, and they did it to their captives, or to the nations they had taken over power from. And if they came to you and said, I want your sword, or I want your food today, or I demand you take this and take it over there. Agree. And so you even go further? I'll do it. Now that's exactly what happened when they called for the man Simon of Cyrene to carry Jesus' cross.
They said, "You carry the cross." And he carried it. Now, I want you to follow me. Did Jesus not say, if you want to follow me, you must carry your own cross and deny yourself? Did he not?
Yes.
Yes.
Is that exactly what he's talking about here? Exactly, that's what he's talking about. If doing something for somebody else is your cross to bear, do it. Do it. And the message he says is, do not turn away somebody who wants to borrow from you. Assuming they need it, obviously. He was not saying, just give stuff away. But if somebody needs to borrow something, loan it to them as a Christian. Do these things mean anything to you? Sure they do. Because the Christian culture is the greatest, most productive culture in the world for these very reasons. Tell the truth. Take care of somebody who doesn't have a coat. Be generous. It'll come back to you. Never forget that. Don't lie. Don't do it. And if somebody actually ask you for some help, yeah, drop what you're doing and help. The Christian culture is the culture that builds up people. It's the culture that brings advancement. It's the culture that produces the best way of life based on the teachings of Jesus. Thus endeth today's lesson. And next week we come to this passage about loving your enemies, and so on we'll go.